What does a member of the Japanese mafia use to keep their canned drinks cold?
I don't know, what?
A yakuza.
Nani?
Yeah, well, I just got the words yakuza and jacuzzi confused, and now I'm in hot water with the Japanese mafia.
Why do yakuza swear a loyalty oath? Because they can't do pinky promises. Thank you.
Nani?
Why did Majima cross the road? To get to Kiryu-chan.
A joke's on you!
Why did Majima open a bakery? Because he wanted to make dough in Kamurocho.
Nani?
So no one said all games were gonna be this way. Backlog's a joke, a choke, gamer cards at my hay. It's like you always play 2 years behind. When you really need a boost to heart, to health, or even your mind. No, Cal'll be there for you.
She'll say games that are so.
Matt'll be there for you. We'll be there for you.
Cause we've all been there too.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and then there's us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I'm your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, the Majima to my Kiryu, my podcast partner in crime, Mr. Matt Mason.
Nani? Did I use that right?
Yeah. We got a colorful cast of guests this week. We've got Josh Carpenter.
Nani.
Ryan McCarthy.
Nani.
And Pascal Takaya.
Kiryu-chan.
Uh-oh, Majima's everywhere, even on the podcast.
Well, one of these things is not can't like get away the with other.
Him. You can't get away from him.
And if it wasn't obvious by our bad jokes and abuse of the word nani, we're doing Yakuza Kiwami this week. I had to think about it for a second, Matt, because you were just talking about Like a Dragon. I'm like, wait.
Oh, yeah.
Infinite Wealth? No, I'm playing that. I need to get back to that one. I just played Yakuza Kiwami.
That's right. Rewind a little bit.
I'm sorry. I'm getting over a minor cold and have kind of an infected tear duct, so I've been out of it for the past couple of days. I apologize if I mess anything up this show, but I do think it's going to be a great show because it's always fun to talk Yakuza.
It's always fun to yes. listen to you talk Yakuza.
One of these days you're going to play one of these, Matt.
I am. Listen, Switch 2. You need to be powerful enough to port those things over. Let's do it.
But according to the developers, the Switch audience wouldn't be interested in a Yakuza game.
Oh.
Wasn't that the excuse that they were Nani. Touting?
Did they say anything about that?
I mean, the ports of 1 and 2 bombed really badly on the Wii U. I don't know that necessarily means anything.
What did not bomb poorly on
fair
the Wii
enough.
U?
Fair.
That's like saying something bombed on the Dreamcast. It's kind of a given at that point.
Nobody wants it.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and like take a guess that we're talking about the first Yakuza today, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be pretty positive.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that there's going to be much negativity here.
It's not negativity, but more just...
Nani?
Jesus.
Well, looks like I'm going to have to dip out here and go buy myself a PS5 and PlayStation Portal. That's how I'll do this all.
Slightly expensive way to do it, but it'll work.
So,
just going full in.
I'm curious, had any one of us ever played the original PS2 version?
Ooh.
Unfortunately, no.
I'm not sure that is unfortunate, given some of the things I've heard about it. Maybe it's unfortunate.
I was going to say that. Well,
I mean, I'd still like. Well, I would have appreciated being able to check out for myself.
Yeah, yeah. It is infamous for the very good dub. And the combat is definitely, you know, it was a product of its time. It is like a 2005, 2006 PS2 game.
Yeah, I just always thought it was interesting that even though that particular version didn't do well, somehow both of them became such a cult hit that we managed to get three. And then next thing we know, they're just all over the place now. Like, the series is crazy popular.
Well, it was much later. I mean, even three and four didn't sell well, to the point where we waited for, God, was it like 4 years to get the localization of five? I mean, it's only in the last few years that Yakuza's really kicked off and picked up.
Yeah, and the original, that would have come out when I was like in my mid-20s, and I don't think at that time I would have probably picked that up on my own, and it's probably better that I didn't, because I don't, 20 something year old me probably wouldn't have been the right audience for that.
This is one where even not just the content, but the story really kind of skews to an older demographic.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I was like 13 or something when it came out.
And I'll probably say this a few more times tonight. I know I've said it in the past, but I still maintain that the right way to play Kiwami is after playing Zero.
Yeah. We'll get into that.
I mean, I've actually have seen people seen just start with Kiwami 1.
Ooh. We wrote a whole article about this.
I ball card at these people. I would actually get starting with the PS2 Yakuza 1. But Kiwami 1 got, even if it's more joke. Playable.
It's not even the playability, but like for me, the way the story just hits harder, I think, in all the right ways after Zero. Mm-hmm.
I thought the stuff with Nishiki kind of needs the context from Zero to hit fully.
Yeah, Zero kind of gave them the chance to go back and really more flesh out that character and the relationship between Kiryu and Nishiki to make Yakuza Kiwami kind of hit more when that, you know, like, relationship breaks. But we're getting ahead of the game.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Why don't we have a brief musical interlude? Give us a chance to fill our water cups, because I have a feeling we're going to talk a lot. And then when we get back, we'll just dive right into it. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Yakuza Kiwami with just a hint of the original PS1 game in there, even though I don't think any of us played it.
PS2.
PS2, sorry, why did I say PS1? I've had PS1 on the brain. I've been playing Final Fantasy Rebirth. Anyway, released on the PlayStation 3 in Japan on January 21st, 2016, and then worldwide for the PS4 on August 29th, 2017, then came to PC 2 years later, and then Xbox One in 2020, and then Amazon Luna, of all things, in 2022.
Amazon forgot they had that, didn't they?
They must have. And I remember it being a big deal when the Yakuza games came to Xbox, because they were all on Game Pass.
They're still mostly on Game Pass, yeah.
There was that one guy who was like, yes, finally, Amazon Luna. I've been waiting since the PS2 days. I've been waiting since 2005.
That guy, that singular guy must be an Amazon employee.
I think it was Detective Date.
But reading about the production of this game, that basically they wanted people to experience the original game with more modern sensibilities, and they rebuilt it from the ground up in the Yakuza 0 engine, which, you know, kind of makes sense given that it's basically a direct sequel to Yakuza 0. And I think one of you before the break was saying that, you know, you're kind of behooved to play Yakuza 0 before this one, since they I guess they tie in a little bit better.
You know, like, there are definitely people who argue about this, like what order you should start them in. I am firmly in the camp of starting with Yakuza 0, both because, like, I think the story works better that way, and I also think that Yakuza 0 is still just, like, if not the best game, maybe the top two of the best games in the series. And, like, if you're going to start with somewhere, start right with the best so that you get, you know, like, the series puts its best foot forward and you can quickly decide, like, whether this is for you or not. Don't get me wrong, I love Yakuza Kiwami, but, I mean, it's not, to me at least, it's not as good as Zero.
Well, Kiwami is serious in tone, and Zero, I mean, Zero is too, but it also has, man, does it have a lot of just zaniness in it.
Yeah, so when the first story beat is what's his partner's name? I am blanking.
Nishikiyama?
Yeah, Nishiki. Saying that the mob boss tried to force himself on Yumi, and I'm like, okay. This got a little bit creepy really fast compared to some of the other Yakuza games that I've played, because bear in mind, I played them completely in the wrong order.
You got a unique experience that you're cultivating.
An experience I don't recommend, but I don't regret either. But it's like, yeah, the whole tone of that one was just a little bit darker than what I had kind of come to know. You could have made drinking game out of every time a woman got slapped in it and been quite trashed.
Yeah, you can see the era it was made in, that they have developed. They've evolved in a number of different ways. Definitely the way they treat women has evolved as the series has moved along. I mean, the first game was written, they actually contracted a Japanese novelist who wrote crime dramas to write their main basic plot for at least the first game. So that's part of the reason it's kind of...
I think it was the first two games.
Yeah, I think it was the first two. That's right. And so it definitely, you see a much more serious, hard-boiled crime, you know, drama tone to the first two games. And they slowly develop over the games into being a little bit more zany, a little bit more zany, a little bit more zany. I say that even though in the second, you know, Yakuza game, you fight tigers, you know, fist the paw. So, I mean, there's always been a little bit of the craziness there.
And then 3 isn't, like, I don't even remember 3 as zany, just as a little bit more lighthearted with the children and the orphanage. But even 3 had, when your Aniki halfway through gets killed in the, I think it's in the fighting arena or something like that. And I don't recall his name, but boy, that hit me kind of hard. So 3, even as lighthearted as 3 is, it's not that light at all.
I'll say this much. It was very interesting mood whiplash going from Kiwami for me at the beginning of the year with this kind of more serious tone, and then jumping to Infinite Wealth, which started off as goofy as it could have possibly been and just kept rolling with the goofiness.
I mean, I assume that's because of Ichiban at that point, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh, yeah.
And also, I mean, I don't have first-hand experience with that game yet, but I was thinking also Kiryu's, his 7-game story arc has been concluded. So, you know, I'm okay with him having a more zany, lighthearted game.
Yeah, Kiryu's definitely a little more lighthearted in Infinite Wealth, despite some of the story beats that I can't get into because of massive spoilers, but...
I know, yeah, that's me. Now I'm struggling not to spoil things for that game.
I mean, so Josh already said that Zero is like one of the best Yakuza games, but I mean, on top of that, it's just I think my main reason for saying you should play it first before Kiwami is not just it's a good game, but it's an amazing prequel. It's not even it's not even Kiwami that's doing the heavy lifting. It's all Zero in the way Zero slots in so well to come before Kiwami. But if you don't have that, then Kiwami is, you know, absolutely fine on its own too.
I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves with the price, but when these games go on sale, you can easily pick up the whole series for like $5 each, except for the most modern ones.
Up to six,
the most recent ones.
Or maybe even Like a Dragon is probably pretty affordable at this point.
Oh, geez, I think I picked up Like a Dragon / Yakuza 7 for $15 last year when I played it for the backtrack.
So for the price of like $40, you can basically have a year's worth of great gaming.
Yeah. Yeah, because Chris is going through all of them. My co-host on RPG Cast, he's playing them in chronological order. And I think before he left for his tech conference, he was on either 4 or 5.
3 was the last one I heard him talk about, and he was having a hard time with it, understandably. It's 3 has aged. 3 is a rough road to hoe.
Yeah, well, 3 now is in, you know, like in at least the functionality of 3 is now the oldest game in the series, because 1 and 2 actually got updated. You know, 3 through 5 only just got kind of like basically they made it look slightly better in HD, but they didn't change the underlying, you know, gameplay.
I know they changed something about that one Manzai sub story in 5.
Oh yeah. They tweaked that. They changed a couple of the characters who became persona non grata in Japan. And they swapped some of those people out. But I mean, most of it didn't get the complete overhaul that 1 and 2 did.
Yeah.
So Kelly, you started, you're one of the people who hasn't played Zero. So what was this?
I played
going?
Zero.
You played Zero?
Yeah, I played Zero for the backtrack last year.
Oh, okay. See, I've totally forgotten that.
Because I had trouble getting into it, and you guys said just keep with it till you get to Majima, and you guys were 100% correct. And it was like, I'm glad I am glad that I played Zero for this, because I had a lot more context for Nishiki. I'm going to butcher his name this whole show.
Nishiki.
Just call him Nishiki.
Nishiki, thank you. Had
that,
a lot
that
more context.
Is so important.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you get it. I mean, they've added in, I mean, that's one of the things they did in Kiwami, is they added in as you go through the game and as Kiryu, you end up seeing these flashbacks of Nishiki as he's like all the time that, you know, like, so let's get back to the story. So, you know, like you have this, you have Yumi, Kiryu and Nishiki's childhood friend from the orphanage, who gets assaulted by the head of the family, the head of the Dojima family, and Nishiki rushes in and he kills Dojima. And Kiryu comes and sees this scene, and he's like, he's going to take the fall for this, because Nishiki, he has this sick sister, and like Kiryu's like, you know, like, you can't go to prison, I have to take the fall for this, because you have to take care of your sister, you have to take care of Yumi and your sister, and I'll take the fall. So Kiryu goes to prison for 10 years, and Kiwami is just like opening up 10 years later. He gets out of prison. He's been thrown out of the family. And, you know, like, now Kiryu kind of has to put his life back together. And the, like, where was I going to go after explaining the story, the opening of the story? I'm sorry.
Found it interesting that the series is weirdly cyclical, given that when you're introduced to Ichiban, he goes to jail for 10 years taking the fall for somebody else.
For a crime he didn't commit, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that was kind of an interesting bookend.
Well, that happens a few times even within the original seven games, too, with other characters. Like that right. fish out of water that I'm back in Kamurocho after how long, you know, after being in jail for... Saijima, in, I guess that would have been four?
Four or five.
Yeah. Yeah. Four, yeah. Very similar, too, and he comes back to Kamurocho and nothing is the way he remembers it, and he has to find his way and find his place, and, yeah, I mean, that's happened a few times. So where does the... So Kira gets out of prison. Okay, so he goes to the Dojima family headquarters, and he must sneak in or something because he's no longer part of the Dojo clan. He's out. But while he's there, Kazuma gets shot right in front of him.
Yeah,
not fatally yet. But of course, like the guards rush in, and Kiryu is. He looks guilty. He looks like he's like he just shot his father figure. Kazuma has his, oh Lord. I mean, the story like goes so many places still. But, so that's his mentor, the man who owns the Sunflower Orphanage. And so it appears that he's now also attempted to assassinate him. So now he's not only out of jail and out of the family, but he's also on the run. He's got to go on the lam and try to, is that his like, I mean, there's like 18 other plot threads that kind of pull him at the beginning. It's not just that, but also is it the 10 billion
yen? The 10 billion yen. Yeah. So there was 10 billion yen that was stolen from the Tojo clan. And so everyone is trying to, everyone in the Tojo clan and everyone, you know, like pretty much everyone in the criminal underworld is trying to get this, you know, $10 billion that's been stolen and
dollars of yen
totally screw that up. And it's all tied into this young girl that Kiryu, stumbles into in Kamurocho, Haruka, who we kind of first get introduced into her.
Yeah.
Is it a surprise that she's Yumi's daughter later, or is that known? It's kind of implied from the beginning.
Well, it's stated that she's Yumi's niece. Aunt Yumi. Is it Mizuko or something like that? Her mother and who's said to be Yumi's sister, right? So Kiryu runs into her because.
He was looking for Yumi as well. Right?
Yumi, yeah, they're all trying to find Yumi at this point. And in doing so, like he goes to this bar, and that's where he finds Haruka on the floor holding a gun, and every other patron in the bar has been brutally murdered.
Yeah, this game has some dark scenes in it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very it's super serious. I mean, it has all the crazy sub stories and everything, but like the main story is just kind of unrelenting. So basically, I think that kind of sets it up to where Kiryu more or less agrees to take on Haruka because they're both looking for. Well, she's a child by herself in Kamurocho, first of all, but they're both looking for the same thing, which is Yumi, right? Like, so at this point, Yumi is kind of the key that they're hoping will lead to the answers to everything, the stolen money, and also the actual head of the Tojo clan has, I think we didn't mention it, but he's been assassinated, and then Kazuma almost getting shot right in front of Kiryu. So all this stuff happening, and they kind of think, like, all the roads seem to lead to Yumi, right? Mm-hmm. Somehow. Yeah, but, I don't remember
and,
how.
And, but. Like, in this 10-year period, Nishiki has kind of, like, changed from being Kiryu's, you know, he was his blood brother before his Aniki, and now he has kind of, like, become twisted and cold, and he is now just, like, hell-bent on, you know, like, kind of manipulating the situation into trying to, you know, get power and become the head of the new head of the Tojo.
He's, to me, Nishiki is kind of the real tragic, not hero, but he's the tragic figure of the play. Only because I saw him in Zero, and I know, so it's one thing to be told that they're blood brothers, you know, or that they're very close, and it's another to see it and then to see how it is 10 years later, like what that's turned into and how cold and distant he's forcing himself to be.
I think it has to hit. I wish we had someone who had played the original without playing Zero, because like I imagine it has to hit much harder. Because Zero, like you said, you feel that connection. You know, Nishiki really was Kiryu's, you know, his rock, his best friend. He would have done anything. He would have died for Kiryu in that game. And then to see how that is so changed over it, it makes, you know, all those little flashback scenes you get along the way as you see Nishiki just kind of like slowly kind of like get broken down as a human is just, you know, it's heart-wrenching, even though like he's undoubtedly a kind of like a, you know, a nefarious figure by the end.
Well, there's a lot, there's other things that go into it too. I mean, I don't know how overt this is stated, but the guilt that is probably weighing on Nishiki about Kiryu taking the fall for him, killing Dojima, right? And going to prison, right? And just the having to live with that basically that silent secret. And I think Nishiki also has, he's kind of in love with Yumi, but Yumi only has eyes for Kiryu at the beginning.
Yep.
So he's, you know, he loses the person that he loves the most, Kiryu, I would say. He's not maybe like outright rejected, but like his love's not
reciprocated
to him. I mean, it's classic like tragic figure stuff. He's kind of like piled on in the clan and the organization because he's a peon still, and XYZ, and then 10 years of this, imagine.
It's even worse for it, you know, like Kazuma sets Nishiki up with like his own family, and he tells him like part of the reason I'm setting you up, you know, like with your own family is so that Kiryu hopefully will have a place to come back to. You know, like I can't accept him because I'm too high up in the, you know, like in the organization. But like, you know, if I set you up with a family, then Kiryu will have a place to come back to when he gets out of prison. And so all the, you know, Kazuma gives him all these, you know, like really experienced Yakuza, but they all treat him like absolute crap because he's, you know, he's almost like the boss's kid who doesn't know how to do anything. Okay. And
he's a figurehead and everybody knows it.
Exactly. And part of what, you know, like Nishiki even has to like degrade himself because, you know, part of it is he has a sick sister who needs a organ transplant. And he has this doctor who comes to him and tells him like, well, if you get me 30 million yen, I can, you know, like I could get you an organ on the black market. And so he has to kind of go to that. I forget the Yakuza's name who is working for him and just like kind of degrade himself and be like, you know, like I just need money, you know, like, yes, you're awesome. You know, like I'm going to bow. I'm going to stick my face on the floor, you know, like and beg you to go and help me get money so that I can try and save his sister. And then, you know, like the tragedy of it is even once he gets the money, his sister, the organ doctor was just like stringing him along, and he just like, you know, doesn't get him the organ and just jumps town, and you know his sister dies, and he's just like a total broken husk of a man.
Yeah, and I think after 10 years of that, then when Kiryu returns, there's probably bound to be some resentment. You know, Kiryu just, I mean, in a way, like probably this is how it seems to Nishiki, that he just has it handed to him. You know,
yeah.
He's a superior fighter. I think he probably even kicks Nishiki's ass at some point, probably early on too. He's got the girl, or he could have had the girl, you know, like, and it didn't all work out for Kiryu either, but, you know, Nishiki doesn't see that like rationally.
No.
There's jealousy and resentment and all, like all this complex human drama, like so, you know, I just, what other RPG goes to some of these places? This is one of the reasons I love the Yakuza friend, especially, you know, the Kiryu story arc and the early games, like Kiwami.
The game always gave me kind of HBO drama vibe, like a Sopranos or Game of Thrones or what have you.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I mean, if I wasn't in it for the drama, I would, you know, like that's what I was saying earlier. I think younger me probably couldn't have appreciated it as much as I do now. So I'm 100% there for that. Mm-hmm. And that was and Kiwami was still in the good days where no game could end without without two men on top of a high rise building tearing off their shirts, right?
And screaming at one another.
Yes. Yes.
This is the one that started it all, man.
So there's, I mean, I honestly, right before we sat down, I watched like a 30-minute story recap, but I think a lot of it's just kind of in the moment. I mean, you do get introduced to a lot of series mainstays. Haruka, Date, I had mentioned earlier for just a moment. Yeah. He's around for quite a while after this, and this is, you know, he's the one that bails Kiryu out when things kind of go sideways at the Dojima headquarters because he knows there's more to Kiryu being arrested for a crime. Well, Kiryu doesn't say he didn't commit it, but Date suspects that there's a lot more to this crime that Kiryu took the fall for. So yeah. He's 10 years later, he's still right there, like trying to pick up the pieces or pick up the trail again, I guess.
I mean, in that case, I mean, of course, they tied in, like it kind of even ruined Date's life. Date was the one who investigated that crime, and he kept pushing. And like, you know, his superiors basically had to, you know, tell him to knock it off, and it kind of like ruined his marriage and everything else.
Yeah. And also his relationship with, I mean, this is it explored in this game? I think it is even, that comes back in future games too. The fact that Date is a failed father, like his relationship with his daughter is at least rocky, if not worse, maybe.
Yeah. That was one of the side ones in the side stories in this game. Yeah.
So I think once Haruka comes into play, though, a lot of those story beats revolve around Haruka constantly being abducted by one organization or a gang or another, and then Kiryu having to go in and get her back. And, you know, other small plot pieces kind of happen along the way, but boy, it would probably be a fool's errand to, like, list them all. I know the Yakuza organizations get their hands on her. The Omi Alliance shows up. They kidnap her at one point. I think the Chinese triads get her. And Kiryu always coming along to get her. And the police always on his tail, like trying to you know, catch him out, basically, and just causing trouble for him. At some point, they go to the florist. The florist gets introduced in this game in Purgatory.
Yeah.
And so from there, eventually, is it okay to kind of like fast forward to like the ultimate like reveal now? I mean, so along the way, you do find out that Yumi is Mizuki. Yeah, if that's her, if I remember right, Yumi is Mizuki. Yumi is Haruka's mother, and she's the one who's, well, she was one of the ones who stole the
money. Yeah, she worked with Kazuma and the former head of the Tojo clan to steal the money, because it was actually money that was, I'm trying to remember now the exact ones, where it was done by a politician who was using the Tojo to like launder the money.
Maybe.
And he was trying to use the money to kind of like take over the both the Tojo and the Omi, and kind of like fuse all of the underworld into like one giant organization that served him.
Yeah, I feel like that plot point kind of happens in every Yakuza game.
the also the bad guy who comes out of left field, late in the game. Yeah,
the shady government organization that pops up. I think in one of the games it was the corrupt police force. That was kind of a nice change of pace.
Three. I always kind of enjoyed the CIA playing a role in the shady government dealings. Kind of like
Americans.
Well, hey, that's like stolen from real life. You know, the CIA did kind of play in with the Yakuza back in the 50s.
So by game's end, everybody assembles at the top of Millennium Tower, where Yumi has a club that she runs, and the money is hidden there in like a vault. And everybody's there, like the final like 18 face-offs all happen there. Oh, God, how does it all go down?
Well, I knew that as soon as you found out that Yumi was the little girl's mother, that she was doomed.
I mean, she was probably doomed regardless, just for having that like Kiryu connection.
She probably was, but then you get a little girl in there, and that just makes you an instant red shirt.
Yeah. So her ex-hubby. Oh, so that's the other thing. Haruka's father, who's like, I think he's that villain out of left field that you were talking about, right, Josh?
Yeah, the politician, I think, yeah.
Yeah, he's that, or yeah, I think he is, and he's definitely got like ties to these secret organizations. So he's been trying to kill Haruka and Yumi for years, apparently, because he got with her out of love. They had a child together, but then he married to further his career. And basically, Yumi and Haruka became like kind of like a stain on his, the skeleton in his closet. So he's been trying to have them killed, which is how Yumi lost her memory. She did lose it.
Yeah, there was amnesia. I've forgotten now how she got the amnesia, but yeah, I remember that.
I feel like it was connected to that. And yeah. Then Kazuma helped her concoct this story of, oh, she has a sister. Then she basically, you know, she took on this this made-up sister's identity to kind of stay safe. And they sent Haruka off to the to Kazuma's orphanage. And Kazuma's had his hand in all of this. Oh, by the way, Kazuma's dead by now. He dies halfway. Kiryu loses his, you know, his father figure. Who?
Oh, you have that huge tearful scene where Kazuma was saved Haruka, and Kazuma tells Kiryu that he actually murdered, you know, like killed the reason everyone was in that orphanage was because Kazuma, those were the kids of the people that Kazuma had killed back in his assassin days. Like, geez, creepy. And then Kiryu, like, right as he's dying, is like telling him, like, no, it's okay, you killed my parents, you're my real dad.
Yeah. And right. So he's dead until the next time you see him in, I think it's Kiwami 2.
three.
It's in Yakuza 3? Okay. Where there's a whole subplot about Kazuma coming back from the dead, right?
Yep.
no further mention of that now. I always found that one to be a little bit weird, but all right. Anyway, they're all at Yumi's club. Haruka's father shows up. They have a Kiryu beats him. Nishiki shows up. Kiryu beats him. and everybody else that happens to be around. And in order to kind of then Yumi pulls out a bomb. She said, you know, she reveals, so here's the money. I think that's the first time they finally reveal that the money's been there all along. And she's got a bomb in a suitcase bomb, and she's planning on blowing it sky high. So before she can do that, her ex. Well, basically husband, right? Like her ex-lover, the big villain, shoots her.
I think he was trying to shoot Haruka. He was trying to shoot Haruka, and she got Yumi, like, got in the way to save her. Yeah, takes the bullet.
I think Kiryu got shot first,
yeah.
Then Yumi.
Yeah, but Kiryu was never, like, fatally, was it in the leg or something?
No,
shoulder or something like that, you know.
Yeah, right. Kira can just be shot like five times,
and that's where five. Nishiki comes out, and you know, like after, and just like stabs a guy and kills him, you know.
Well, because after shooting, so he tries to shoot Haruka, gets Yumi instead. So I think he puts the gun to Kiryu's head to finish the deed, and that's when Nishiki pops out. And saves Kiryu because is he atoning for his sin at that point, or does he just kind of want him for himself? I think he's trying to make up for it.
Yeah.
He's not fatally wounded. He blows him, right? So he takes, I wish I could remember the man's name, the actual bad guy. So Nishiki comes out of nowhere, saves Kiryu by stabbing him. They go in the vault together, and Nishiki blows the bomb with himself and the bad guy in the vault, basically saying, like, get out of here, you know, I'll finish this once and for all, kind of a moment. And he blows himself up, which scatters the 10 billion yen all over Kamurocho, which comes back in Yakuza 4 when Akiyama's story starts right there at that moment.
Just like that great tie-in back to the first game.
Mm-hmm. That moment of all the money floating down, which is a fan favorite character right there. But is that the end of... Well, I guess the only thing left to say is Kiryu takes on Haruka like full time at that point. They both kind of lost more or less and new to the world in a way, and they both kind of decide to stick together, and that's where that's formed.
I think the only thing we glossed over was that in the middle of all that mess, Kiryu did become the fourth chairman of the Tojo Clan. There was that that other side plot
for like a moment. He takes it on and then immediately discards it again. And that happens a few more times than in the next couple of games too. I think he actually becomes chairman a second time at one point. Maybe also in Yakuza 3 or something.
Or is it the end of 2 where he sets up,
the guy.
Yeah, the next guy to take over, Daigo, to take over.
I don't remember.
The problem with the Yakuza game, like, I love it. I love all the melodrama. But there are so many, like, twists and turns as you go along. It's hard to keep all of them straight.
It's like a soap opera.
I was literally just listening to you guys talk about the plot, and I was stunned how much I did not remember these details.
I'm
sure we're forgetting lots.
Sure.
And when you've played a game, these games as close together like I have, they start to run together. It was like, wait, was this the one about the real estate scheme? No, that was 0.
I don't even think that a lot of those narrative beats are like the most important thing about the game, because if you look at Kiwami as just like a piece of the greater, you know, the whole series, then it's more about the character relationships and the interplay between them, and, you know, where did this character come from, what road has this character been on the whole time, and how did that play out? Like, that's the important part, not the secret organization that flew a chopper to the top of the building to kill Haruka. Okay, that doesn't really matter so much. But the fact that, and this here comes again, here comes Zero back again. The fact that at the end of Kiwami, Nishiki does do a 180 and sacrifices himself to save Kiryu after everything that they've been through, and, you know, in those two games combined, that's the important part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. The fact that, well, you kind of know it the first time he meets Haruka, you already know this is going to be a very long-winded father-daughter story, and so it is, and that makes Yakuza 6 hit so hard to me. That's I can't remember if it was off mic or if we were recording, but I mean, I think six is my favorite, not necessarily in all like the different story beats, but just following that father-daughter
the emotional story. Punch of it.
So I mean, seeing where everything comes from kind of here in Kiwami, that's I think that's what's most important. The florist, I've always had the soft spot for him.
You like the guy that lives underground and keeps tabs on everybody?
Yeah, and I think also I don't know if this is like the right place to slot this in, but the way Kamurocho is always a little different in every game. And I think the version of Kamurocho that you see in Kiwami 1 is my favorite. Like, Millennium Tower is there, but they haven't gotten rid of Purgatory yet. You know, eventually Purgatory becomes like this, like when the Majima Construction Company eventually builds their, what is it, like a shopping mall or an office
something,
complex?
Something.
And that whole area kind of gets repurposed. But it's not, right now it's just a park with an underground gambling den. Like, I love that. That's my Kamurocho right there. Shangri-La hasn't burned down yet. I think there's a whole scene in Shangri-La that plays out with, we haven't really barely talked about Majima yet. He's,
despite him being everywhere, we haven't talked about him.
Yes. So six is my favorite game, but man, I love the Kamurocho of Kiwami 1.
It's the interesting thing about these games, like, you know, Kamurocho is always the same yet different, and it is, you know, like the fact that it's always this same, you know, square, you know, how many ever it is, like 10, 12 square blocks of it, you every single time you pick up one of those games, like, you kind of know where everything is when you've played them over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But then it's like going around and seeing all the little differences, the new little noodle shop over here. Like, oh, they finally gotten rid of the dirty VHS place. You know, like all that kind of stuff. It's always fun to see and explore. It makes it always feel like a real lived-in place.
Like, whenever the Sega arcade has a Virtua Fighter instead of Super Hang-On.
Well, there's that, yeah. Whenever, in every game, when I walk down, is it Tenkaichi Avenue? Whichever, I always stop and look for the little plaque for Club Serena. And I don't think it's there in every game, but I always want it to be. And then across the street, Stardust. And Stardust becomes probably more important in like the next one or two sequels, but there is a little bit of like, you do meet some of the characters from Stardust, and eventually you build a pretty good relationship with the head host and the owner of the club across the street. And God, shit like that makes me so nostalgic for like just thinking back to Kiwami, because I want those places. I wish they were in every game. And I always look for, like, here's Serena, here's Stardust.
It's like, I always want to go into Serena, whether you can or can't.
Yes, I always climb those back stairs every time, just in case.
How many fights do you have in that series in that little empty lot behind Serena?
In that alley, yes.
Yes.
A lot. And not even just as Kiryu, but that alley plays host to fights even in the Judgment games too, with whatever, what's his face? I can't recall right now. We did a backtrack on Judgment not too long ago.
Yeah.
The crime density in that tiny little strip of land has to be insane.
Yeah.
So then, Pascal, does it disappoint you when a game like Infinite Wealth takes place in a completely new setting, or do you enjoy the variety?
I haven't played it yet, so that's yet to be determined, I guess. It's kind of hit or miss. When they went to Okinawa in 3, I loved it. I needed that break. After 0 and 1 and 2, I needed a break from Kamurocho, and that was really appealing to me. You do go back to Kamurocho even in that game, but getting out of the city, that was appealing. But then when they did it in 4 and 5, it was kind of hit or miss. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. Some of the cities in 5, I couldn't wait to be done with, you know? and some I liked. 6, I can't remember. Where did they go in 6? What is it based on? I'm blanking
it's
on
it. It's
that
small. It's the Onomichi.
Yeah, Onomichi.
Yeah. Now, that I liked a lot. So I think it might be more an issue of, if I spend enough time, like 6 is just centralized in that one city, and that's okay. 4 and 5 try to bite off more than they could chew. So I guess it could go either way. But there's probably always going to be at least a small part that misses Kamurocho if I don't get to go there. So yeah,
I don't know if they're ever going to totally let go of that though.
Even Infinite Wealth has a little bit in Kamurocho before you get shipped off to Hawaii.
Yeah. Okay. Kiryu deserves a vacation. So when he goes to the beach resort or the island vacation or even the beachside orphanage, like, that's a well-deserved rest for him. And I don't begrudge him that.
Yeah, I don't blame him either.
Or there's a, God, how could I forget? What's the city in 0? And you go there a few more times over the.
Oh gosh. It's I think it's based off of Osaka, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sotenbori. Sotenbori, yeah. And then we go there again with Saijima, 2. I think, in 4. Yakuza 4, probably. Or
yeah.
No, Yakuza 5, definitely. Yakuza you get 5. To.
That's where Haruka is, Sotenbori. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
dance battles, man. Dance battles.
Yeah. I did not mind the dance battles.
I kind of like the dance battles. Some of the side quests in that one kind of wore on me, but I love the dance battles.
But it was Haruka, man. It was okay.
Normally when I play Yakuza games, I try to do a little bit of everything, but not try to 100% complete it, because usually I am playing them for a backtrack. I kind of fast tracked this one, partly because I was playing it at the beginning of the year, sort of as backtrack homework, even though I set my New Year's resolution famously was that I was going to cut down on the backtrack homework. So I didn't do a lot of the side stories in this. I think I did a couple at the beginning and just kind of fast-tracked through the game and was really surprised at how quickly you could get through a Yakuza game if you just focused on the main story.
Well, I mean, this one is, you know, it is the first one. It is the shortest. Certainly the main story is the shortest. So, like, yeah, this is one you can get through in, like, 20 to 30 hours if you don't smell the roses too much.
Yeah. But so were there any memorable side stories?
I sure do remember that one group of side stories that were just those guys that fucking like pickpocket Kiryu, and it was just weird.
I bet they didn't do that a second time.
No, they did like 3-4 times. It's like the same location too.
I remember that one now, where you had to chase the guy down and kind of pick him out of a crowd.
I forget.
And I think some of the other ones that I did involved leveling up my skills.
I think the only one that sticks out for me, I mean, one is pocket car racing, because I always get addicted to the pocket car racing. So there was, you know, like a side story that you had to do about like finding a replacement for the guy who is like getting married. But the funniest side one was there was this one side quest where a reporter corners like Kiryu Date and the florist into like doing this thing about being the best badass dad competition, and the reporter like calls them all DILFs, and I was just like dying laughing.
I think I did do that one.
There's no club management in this one, is there?
No.
So, Josh, were you excited when Pocket Circuit Champion shows up in 6?
I always do it, man. I'm always doing it.
Well, not the actual racing, but the
side quest. Yeah. Because wasn't he in Onomichi?
Yeah, that's what I meant. When if Kiryu has a run-in with him and he wants to reminisce with Kiryu about the old days.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the same guy.
They set up all of that for, you know, 0, Kiwami, and then 6, because that's the order they released in. So that was one of the side quests that carried across all 3 games. I forget there were one or two others that did that.
So go ahead.
Well, there was I might be getting mixed up with Kiwami 2. There's a side quest that ties 1 and 2 together. And Kiwami 2 is the one I've forgotten the most about, but it's somewhere there's a side quest about a man who steals people's pants and like while they're wearing them. But now I'm not 100% sure that wasn't in 2.
I think that one's in 0 actually.
Oh, so it ties together 0 in Kiwami 2. Okay, yeah, that might. Yeah, okay, that rings true. Yep, well, never mind. Listen, I couldn't tell you anything about the side quests anymore in this game. I barely even got a synopsis of the main story. But I Kelly, I don't know how you fast track this game. I feel like the story here is like it's so dense that like this might be one of the Yakuza games where you need that palate cleanser more than some of the others, just to take a break from the conspiracy every now and then.
I played it kind of in between other game. I think I like kind of swapped every night between this and Atelier Ryza at the beginning of the year. Since
that's a total change.
Yeah, that's a change. Yeah.
So that was your palate cleanser right there.
Yeah, mainly because, you know, running around doing side quests in Ryza kind of helped ease the tone a little bit in between dramatic crime drama. Plus, I knew that we were doing these 2 backtracks sort of back-to-back, if you will. So I kind of needed to get through both of those games pretty quick. So play one night, play one the other night, depending on my mood. It helped. Mm. But also, I felt like a lot of the stuff, it was kind of easier to ignore this time around, because none of the side stuff really grabbed me like some of the side stuff usually does in these games. Like,
You weren't into Mesocane, whatever the that one was?
Oh, I was going to ask people about that. Like, yeah, the Mesoking, the card game that also turned into, that had scantily clad insect girls.
Oh, I wanted to be into that one just because of how absurd it was. Because I thought
play that
in the arcades.
Yeah,
a card game. I don't remember this at all.
It's this weird like. It's the fucking game you play in the arcade.
Yeah,
it's like rock paper scissors ish. Yeah. Gameplay. Yeah,
I don't know if I missed out on that. I usually don't go to Club Sega that often.
It was basically like the wrestling game from, I think, Zero, the chick wrestling one, but then they're dressed like bugs.
I do the one side quest where I have to play the crane game for some like adolescent child or somebody on a... No, isn't the crane game usually for like a clueless guy on a date with the girl of his dreams? But that's about the extent of the time I spend in the arcade.
That is the one side thing that I will get completely sucked into, is that I am not happy until I get one of every single... thing out of the crane game.
The crane?
game gets you in, yeah. Kelly.
Yeah, you're just getting that stuff. You just really want all the prizes.
Also, in real life, crane games are never that easy.
No. Yes. No, I learned the hard way the first time I was in Japan that Japanese crane games are not built like American crane games, where, you know, if you're kind of skilled, you can get stuff. No, they're terrible that way.
Not for Kiryu. He cleans the machine out.
Yeah, no, I try to clean the machine out too, and I appreciate that there's a lady that's like, hey, can you reset these things?
Yeah.
You know, that there isn't a good loadout, or in my case, I get something stuck in a corner. And I don't know why I'm obsessed with the crane games in this particular series, because it's almost always the same prizes. But yeah, I feel compelled to have to get one of every one of them, no matter what.
The crane game that I remember the best is the one in Sotenbori. I don't know what it is about that particular crane machine out of 7 possible games, but that's the one.
And the ones in Infinite Wealth are evil, because those start to do the box prizes, which are almost impossible to get out with a standard crane.
And those are awful. I had no luck with those.
In real life,
the true final boss.
In real life, you can cheese those by trying to get a one of the crane hooks into like a hole in the box,
like under the flap or something.
Yeah, not so much in a video game where it's like, okay, the gravity is programmed in this one, and it's back in the corner. And I just wasted thousands of yen trying to get this Onomichi robot. Like, I have to have the Onomichi robot.
It's Onomichi. It's
awesome. Is it Onomichio?
Onomichio.
I think we had this conversation when we were talking about what was the last place I saw Onomichio? I think it was in Judgment. So I'm not sure if Josh was even there for that one, the backtrack.
Yeah, he was.
Probably.
Oh, I was trying to remember his name again. When I was playing Judgment and I saw Onomichio in Theater Square, I imagined that was Kiryu in the suit. And it made me happy.
Yeah, Onomichio has a particularly funny appearance in Infinite Wealth, where he says, have you ever heard of the 1991 hit handheld system, the Sega Game Gear? Unfortunately, my battery life is like a Game Gear, and that it's not that good.
I think it was like a 3-hour battery life, maybe, or something.
Yeah. And it's like, well, I have never related to fictional robots so hard right now.
Kelly is there for all the obscure jokes about Japan or Sega games, right?
Yes. Yes. Because I was a Sega kid back in the day.
Oh.
And I love that stuff. Especially when Sega was kind of willing to self-diss like that a little bit.
There's plenty of that in Infinite Wealth.
Not so much talking about how they couldn't turn a profit for 6 years during the Dreamcast era, but that's neither here nor there. Oh, man.
Well, you mean there's no interactive slideshow with their fiscal earnings displayed in the corner of the Sega arcade?
Or the sheet with the thousands of unsold 32Xs listed?
Oh, man.
That was more of a Sega of America thing.
Kiryu would stand, pick up that sheet and go, Nani?
Oh, suffice to say, I did enjoy this game quite a bit. I enjoyed the combat, and even though the story was a little more melodramatic than what I was used to, I still appreciated the story for what it was. We keep forgetting to bring up Majima, and
oh, he's gonna get his whole separate corner. I feel like.
I like how they incorporate Majima because, you know, Kiryu has been in jail for 10 years, so he pretty much lost all of his mojo. So Majima's there to help him kind of bring it back. And early on, some of those side quests where he shows up dressed as a cop and is like, now I need to inspect you for weapons. And I thought he was trying to trick me or something, so I made a point not to have any weapons in my inventory, and then realized, well, no, I need to get in a fight with him so I can continue the side quest to get my dragon fighting style back.
How about when Majima is tied up in the back of a trunk waiting for Kiryu to rescue him?
I didn't get that far with him, unfortunately. I did find it funny when you kept getting random phone calls, and I'm like, I'm going to go to this location. It's going to be Majima, isn't it?
Kiryu-san? Kelly-san?
The whole thing was just very Looney Tunes slash Droopy Dog messing with the wolf character, if you guys have ever seen those cartoons kind of thing, where set up, falls for it, Majima shows up, hilarity ensues.
It made for a great commercial, though, didn't it?
What was the commercial? I didn't see that.
Majima Everywhere? Was that not for this game?
I don't remember.
Josh would remember if I'm right.
Yeah, that was this one. I've forgotten the commercial.
Kelly, it's worth watching. It's where everybody, it's just random, it's citizens of Kamurocho and how everybody is potentially a Majima or something along those lines. It's like a whole like dance and song number that they like a rehearsed a choreographed dance number that they're performing as Majima. Everybody's a Majima.
Was this the actual commercial in Japan or an in-game commercial?
No, this was like a commercial for the game. This was an actual commercial.
Okay,
was it in Japan?
Gotcha.
I think it was also why. I don't know. I'm not the historian. I don't know where it aired and when it aired. I don't remember. You're definitely going to have to look it up.
Yeah, I'm going to have to YouTube that because that also sounds like comedy gold.
So since we're talking Majima now, so I said earlier that like I think like the interplay of characters is really important. And Nishiki's kind of like the tragic figure, but there's the having the context of Zero, there's something about Majima as well that if you and I don't know if this kind of ruins the character a little bit for me, because after playing Zero, I know that this like the Majima that you basically know in all of the other games is an act, right? Especially like the really silly one that's in Kiwami. That's a persona. And now yeah. I know what Majima is really like because I played Zero. And I know there's something going on, you know, in his head. And he was kind of the tragic figure in Zero. So the way he kind of like makes it his mission to annoy some sense back into Kiryu in this game, I thought was it's very like bro-tastic. You know, even though it's going to be several games before Kiryu and Majima really are bros. Like, but I think Majima already knows that's where it's going. And remember, he actually lets himself get stabbed for Kiryu at one point in this game. I mean, I say remember, I didn't remember it either until I watched like a synopsis. But when one of the times Haruka is kidnapped, it's actually Majima that's kidnapped her because he's luring Kiryu over to the batting center. And so there's like, you know, 15 guys, Majima and 15 other guys are there waiting for Kiryu to come get Haruka because they want to, well, they want, Majima just wants to fight Kiryu in any way he can. And as the battle kind of like nears the end, one of the guys pulls out a knife and he's about to get Kiryu. And well, Majima can't let that happen because Kiryu's for him to beat and him to fight, and that's it. So just like later in the game, Yumi like jumps in front and takes a bullet for Haruka. Majima actually throws himself in front of the guy and takes a knife to the gut to save Kiryu just so he can fight him again.
And then because it's Majima and he's awesome, he also beats the crap out of the guy while he's stabbed and bleeding profusely.
So, and I don't know how much of it is the, you know, the character is like a little bit ruined because I feel like I know something that you're not really meant to know as the audience at this point. But also the other side of that is, boy, I appreciate his antics so much more because I feel there's far more behind them than just like, oh, look at this crazy, the mad dog, right? Like he's just a wacky guy. That's not at all what he is.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I am genuinely surprised at this outside of Yakuza 0 that Majima hasn't gotten his own spinoff series.
Ooh.
I don't know. Do you think he could carry his own game? Because I think he could.
Sure.
Sure. I mean, he carried half the game in 0, so why not?
Sure. Sure.
And then the way he comes back in 4, is it 4 and 5, or at least 4? I think it's 4 and 5 between him and Saijima, and then eventually there's a whole plot line in, I think, in 5 where Majima is presumed dead.
Yeah.
But they have a history, the two of them. When Majima was tortured by, I don't know, like the rival clan or whatever, and he couldn't meet up with Saijima that day that Saijima went in and shot up that ramen shop. I know that's like getting way into the lore of stuff that is outside of this game, but. I guess my point was, yeah, Majima already has those main protagonist moments all throughout the series. I think it'd be great to see some spinoff games with him.
Because he is easily one of my favorite characters in the series. To the point where it kind of really disappointed me when he barely showed up in like a dragon outside of a boss fight.
And that was just the worst boss fight to boot.
Yeah. Yeah. The most controller throwing boss fight I've played in a while.
But I mean, maybe that's, you know, the persona that he shows to the rest of the world is kind of goofy, and I don't know if it's, you know, like how long I could stand to be around that version of Majima. Like him having his own game, though, you see, getting into his head and seeing like his interior dialogue, that would be the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, if we have spinoff game, we have the Judgment spinoff games. Yeah, why not have some Majima ones?
Because yeah, I definitely want to see him more as a character and less like a cartoon. Even though I do love and appreciate cartoon Majima, just because of how much he frankly cracks me up as a cartoon character, but also just as him as kind of a tragic character, like how he was in Zero.
I mean, I think the fact that he cracks you up so much in Kiwami is part of the appeal, because listen, you said melodramatic earlier, and I realized that's really all this is, but you know, like I said, I'm there for it. So like, I know that there's got to be some kind of like a interior conflict with him constantly projecting the crazy face out to the world. You know, like, why is he acting so silly? Like, that's that can't be satisfying to him.
Oh, he's definitely trying to laugh through some pain. Make no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You're putting it better than what I was able to. But yeah.
I guess that's why I identify with him so much, because I as somebody who tries to be funny to make other people laugh, it's because, you know, I have my own struggles with depression, and I kind of relate to a character that has to deal with the same thing. But you don't really see that in Kiwami. You only see it in Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, so we went through the main story and a little bit of the side stuff. The fighting system is pretty much just like Zero. Only, you know, using actual skill points to level up your skills instead of money, which was kind of a nice touch. Because I felt like I was always broke in Zero because I was constantly having to use it to upgrade my abilities.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it was very similar style. You know, you could swap between the rush style, like the fast moving one. It was the brawler style. And then what was the third main one? Beast, where you were doing big, huge attacks, but kind of slower. And then the dragon style that you had to do with... you had to upgrade with Majima.
Yeah, I like the beast style the best in both of the games just because I like being able to auto-grab items to use as weapons without having to mash the zero button or the O button to try to pick them up myself.
Circle.
Yeah, you're gonna struggle as you go if you go through the rest of the series because this is like, you know, a much more refined version. And I think Chris went through that, tried to play it himself, where, you know, like you get to three and it's kind of like a big step back.
Yeah.
I appreciated going back to turn-based so much when Infinite Wealth came out. I'm getting old. I don't have the reflexes for action combat anymore. She says as she breaks her wrist trying to fight the hard fights in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth right now.
But use that difficulty slider.
Yeah. Oh, I played all of these games on easy, and there were still some fights that I really struggled with. The big bald guy with the huge face, whose name
Shimano.
I don't remember. Yeah, he all every time I've ever fought him in a Yakuza, he always just kicks my ass.
Yeah, he's another one that comes back once or twice in the next couple of games.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh hey, I remember you. You have a big face.
He's Majima's boss, I think.
Yeah.
I really remember the Shimano fight in Kiwami 1 just being really, I don't know, frustrating. I don't know.
I definitely remember some of the boss fights in this game being kind of annoying and frustrating.
They're kind of trash, honestly.
Yeah, well, some of that is just like a function of this was the first game. They were kind of like learning, you know, like this was the first one they designed. They were learning as they go. And I think it becomes more and more refined as you go along. So you come back to this one and it's polished. It has the really nice polish on everything you go around and see, but some of the boss design, you know, the encounter designs are not optimal.
Yeah, and I think I remember, I forget if it was the final fight or something close to the final. I remember when you had to deal with those two goons with the guns constantly firing at you, and it's like,
they could heal. It was just awful.
Yeah.
Anytime a gun shows up in this series, it makes me want to throw the controller in anger because they are always like at the back of a room, can see you from a mile away and can hit you from a mile away.
Well, it's always terrible. Not only are they really a pain in the butt when they're shooting at you, but the guns that you can get are always completely useless.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, they barely do even damage.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god, I thought Japan was supposed to be a gun-free country. This is bullshit.
It's the Yakuza, Kelly. They're not following the laws.
I know. But another thing that came up that I wanted to bring up, and I can't remember if this was this game or Zero, but seeing Kiryu get his Yakuza tattoo... and the old guy that was administering it, you doing it with the old way with a piece of bamboo and ink, that looked incredibly painful. And I'm sitting there watching that thinking, wow, no wonder these Yakuza guys are tough, because if they're getting it the old-fashioned way, that's got to be brutal.
I believe it was in both. I think you're right. I think there was scenes of that in both games, weren't there?
Yeah.
He definitely goes to his tattoo guy in this game at some point. I don't know if he gets the tattoo, but
Oh, I remember. Sorry.
Maybe he had it started. He just finishes it. You know, that pesky 10-year jail time interruption might have gotten in the way of that.
Yeah, I just remember seeing him laying on a table with the old tattoo guy doing the bamboo technique. If you ever want to make yourself cringe, look up how that works, like on YouTube, and you'll appreciate some of these old tattoo techniques a little bit better. Because man.
I mean, is it the same as like the Polynesian method?
I think so.
It's a little. It's like a piece of bamboo with like some tines on the bottom, and then it gets hammered into your skin one jab at a time, basically.
Oh God, I'm in pain even thinking about it.
Well, only hammered like a very small amount. But yeah, I mean, sure, painful, of course.
I mean, it's just a little tack. It's not like the guy's taking a sledgehammer to it. But I still can't imagine that being comfortable, especially if you're getting a full back.
A full back.
Well, I'm sure they do that over multiple sessions.
Yeah. Until you can't take the pain anymore, probably. But it made me appreciate Yakuza guys a whole lot more if they're getting that done that way.
Well, they got to do that. Otherwise, what would you see when they rip their clothes off and fight one another, you know?
Oh, I know. It makes me sad that tattoos, because of the Yakuza, are kind of taboo in Japan, because those huge back tattoos are freaking beautiful. And I would love to get one like that, but even with a modern tattoo gun, I don't know if I could deal with that kind of pain. So if I was going to get one, I would get like, I think one of the guys has a tiger, get something like that, but have it be a house cat. Just for my own amusement.
Is that not Kiryu that has the tiger?
Kiryu has the dragon.
The dragon, of course. Who has the tiger?
It's the bad guy from 2.
Okay.
Whose name I'm forgetting right now. Like, I know there's doing my research, like, prepping for this, I think some of the, like, I think there's even supposedly symbolism in the koi that's on Nishiki and, you know, the dragon that Kiryu has. So there's, like, some sort of symbolism that is totally lost on me on that.
And I can't remember what Ichiban has.
Ichiban has the dragon fish.
One? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you had the dragon fish, right?
Yeah.
I thought maybe each... Oh, wait, okay. So I'm thinking of Judgment again, right? Different guy.
Yeah, different one.
I don't remember if that guy had one.
I imagine he doesn't, since tattoos are mostly a Yakuza thing.
Yeah, and he was never officially in the Yakuza. He was just, you know, kind of friendly with the Yakuza.
Are we talking about Judgment right now?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I thought he was in the Yakuza, wasn't he? No? No, you're right. Yeah. He was a lawyer, and... His
Yakuza boss mentor. Paid for him to go to law school.
Yeah, yeah. True. Also, he seems like a little bit more of the modern type, so he may not have had one anyway.
Yeah.
That becomes a plot point where in like Yakuza 4, where like the villains start kind of compare, you know, we don't honor your old outdated ways. You know, this is the new age of the Yakuza, that kind of thing.
Mm.
I don't remember what their views on the tattoos are, but.
Well, I know my husband was telling me that tattoos are even taboo now in Japan, partly because of the Yakuza, and that it's still possible to get them. That they haven't really kind of come along like America has, where, you know, old people, as the older generation is dying out and the younger generation that did the body modification is getting jobs, that it's not nearly the taboo that it used to be, at least in the States, but unfortunately not so much over there.
No, but now, well, never mind. I want to talk about video games, not my old man get off my lawn tirade that I was about to launch into.
Hey, I'm secretly glad that I didn't get a lot of that stuff as I was a kid, because I bet it would look terrible on me now. I was too much of a wuss, but just getting my ears pierced caused me a bad enough infection that I didn't want to have to deal with that on any other part of my body.
I was about to make a comment about ear pods, but I'll let it go.
No, I'm not a big fan of gauges. I think those are kind of gross, if that's what you're talking about.
No, I mean actual, like, wireless earphones, ear pods.
Oh.
To play music and stuff. I'm going in a completely different direction. I said I don't... I was trying not to mention it. Why do you make me explain it three more times?
Sorry. Sorry, I thought you meant the gauges where people stretch out their earlobes.
No, I just didn't want to derail things further than I already was.
Well, I think the derailment is a sign that we're ready for a break, so that we can go do the roundtable and put a bow on this, unless there's anything else we want to bring up.
I think we hit most everything, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so, too. Kiwami, it's on Steam now. I think for around $20. I had the page open earlier to pick some screenshots, but the game goes on sale all the time. And heck, if you have PSN, you probably have it in your account, because it was free on PSN at one point. Yeah, it was, because after I bought it for like $10, it was on PSN the next month, and I was like, wow, I kind of want my money back. If I would have known. But
it's on Game Pass as well.
Yeah. So if you have an Xbox, you don't have to worry about it. You can already play it. It's worth the playthrough. I enjoyed it. I do stick with you guys' recommendations that you really ought to play Zero first, because I think you get a lot more out of it.
But this is also perfectly fine to start with this one, too, if you want to, or you have it.
Yep.
I think we all agree on that.
Yep.
I think the only wrong way to play them is not at all.
Or on the PS2.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Maybe,
I'd be so curious about how janky those PS2 ones play now.
Oh, man, go listen to Mark Hamill playing as Majima and just think about how badly the director screwed up. Like, you know, you have the voice actor for Joker, and you direct him like that. It's so bad.
Does he do it in the Joker voice? But
no, he doesn't. He just plays it like straight. It's terrible.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds awful.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole point. You have a perfect casting, and they totally screw it up.
Because every time I've ever heard Mark Hamill in a cartoon, he's kind of doing a Joker, and I'm trying to imagine how a non-Joker Mark Hamill in a cartoon sounds. He sounds
like Luke.
Luke Skywalker. That's his other, yeah.
Yeah.
So Majin was saying, I want to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters.
Power converters.
Luke, but less smarmy.
Yeah, that sounds like that's pretty bad. I need to go find a YouTube compilation to compare and contrast. See, when you say that it's bad, I'm sitting here thinking, well, he's doing the Joker, but terrible. No. And
see, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, that must have been that, you know, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that is perfect casting. And then you go and you watch the clip, and it's just like, oh my God, how did they screw this up?
I mean, I don't play any Yakuza game in anything other than the original Japanese, so I don't have any idea what else Majima might possibly sound like besides his Japanese voice.
Matt Mercer famously did him in Like a Dragon, and it was just kind of meh. And this is coming from a diehard Matt Mercer fan.
Was that famously? Okay.
Well, because Sam, who was going to be on tonight's show but was having internet problems, hates Matt. And
oh, that's who I was thinking of when you said something about voice actors earlier. But was he, is his Japanese voice still the same voice actor?
I believe so. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. Oh, wow. Someone just sent a video of the Mark Hamill. Well, that I'll have to listen to later today. But let's have our musical intro, and then we'll come back with the round table and put a bow on this. now welcome back to RPG Backtrack, a roundtable where we're now getting into our personal feelings about Yakuza Kiwami. So I always have to ask, did you guys have a favorite moment from the game that particularly stuck out to you? Because I definitely know what mine is.
Well, I kind of spoiled mine earlier when we were talking, that the reporter interviewing them, Kiryu and Date and the florist, for the best badass dad competition was like the side quest that still sticks in my mind after all these years.
Who do you think would win that?
Ooh, I don't know. That's tough. It's got to be Kiryu, though, doesn't it? It's got to be.
For me, the second that it was showing that Kiryu was having to sneak into a funeral, I'm like, this is not going to end well. And surprise, surprise, not only does it not end well, but then they call back to it in the end credits, which I don't know whose funeral he crashed there. I know in the game proper, it was his father figure.
That was when the head of the Tojo clan had been assassinated, or was it just the Dojo, my friend? No, it was the whole clan, I think, right? He had been killed, and then later you find out that was Nishiki.
Yeah.
He assassinated him, and he shot Kazuma while you were there.
But either way, the visual of seeing him running out of a funeral home with the entire Tojo clan chasing after him, and I can't even remember what he did to cause that.
Well, Kazuma got shot while Kiryu had snuck in to speak to him.
Right, right.
And they caught him and assumed that he... Well, obviously, he's not supposed to be there, but they also assumed he's the one that shot Kazuma, so he had to flee.
Yeah.
Historically, anytime Kiryu is at the Tojo clan headquarters, it does not go well.
So if you're there, you're going to have to fight your way through it, pretty yes. much.
So it being a funeral just made it all the more funnier. But yeah, that was mine. Ryan, did you have one?
I kind of struggle to think of something. I think it's just been kind of long since I played it.
I was kind of surprised. Like looking at the game, I had forgotten how many years it's been since it came out back in 2017. I don't know. For some reason, I felt like it hadn't been quite that long.
I think anything before 2020 feels longer ago than it actually was.
Yeah. Before times.
Heck, even before 2016 feels like it's been longer. Of course, we're going to be coming up on the anniversary of that in 2 years. So take that for what you will.
Josh, I have a theory why that is, though. Why it feels like it's not been that long. Because when I was watching the story recap, I was kind of surprised that, like, obviously, I don't remember every detail, but I do remember the major story beats. Except in my mind, they were from all kinds of different games. Like, I thought some of that was from Yakuza 2 or maybe Yakuza 3 or even 4. And I was surprised how many things I recognized that were actually from this game. Like, they seem fresher in my mind. And I got to think that's because just... the way that the story over the course of like the different entries builds on it, and it's just such a well-told story that you don't really forget the major plot points even from a game that you played like 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's how impactful like the main points at least were, that you think those happened several games later when in reality, oh no, that was way back in the first game and I still remember that because I felt like that too.
Mm-hmm.
So did you guys have wait, Pascal, did you say yours?
Yeah. I did. I mean, I don't know. It's got to be the shirt tearing that happens at the end. I really felt like I lost something when that stopped being a thing. I'm pretty sure that was a thing all the way through 5. I don't know if 6 really had that. But it was so gloriously cheesy.
No, it got ridiculous at some point in the series where it was just happening all the time. Yeah.
And in 4 and 5, when you have like 6 different main characters that all have to be part of the climactic battle and they all have to pair up in different combinations. And then we have all the shirts getting flung off the roof. Well, that's great.
I remember in 6 playing through that one and being my first game being like, guys, where are these people getting their shirts tailored to be able to rip them off in one fell swoop? Because you can only pull that off with good Velcro placement.
That was in six. Okay, I didn't remember if it was.
And Josh being like, "Yeah, well, yeah, that's a mainstay of the series." I'm like, "Really? Yeah, it's not a Yakuza game if guys aren't ripping their shirts off."
They rip their shirt off, and then they scream at their feelings at each other, Kelly. This is how men talk to one another.
So that's the secret.
Yes.
If you weren't hosting Backtrack with, like, female influence, I think this is how every Backtrack would go if you weren't around.
Just ripping your shirt off and screaming.
Lots of screaming. I do think that Kiwami 1 is maybe the... It doesn't have any great villains, I don't think. Like, the best characters that also are kind of on the villain side turn out to just be, like, they redeem themselves to be either tragic characters or, kind of heroes in the end. I am missing a little bit of, like, the colorful villains. Like, even Zero had some, I shouldn't say even Zero, but I think Zero might be the best. Zero and Six have, like, such colorful villain casts that, I don't even have one in this game. I'm not counting Nishiki as a villain here, so.
Yeah, I will admit I wasn't really that intimidated by any of the villains in this particular game, mainly because it just seemed like it was everybody that was against Kiryu, and not really any one particular villain. So since we're talking about villains, I guess we can get into characters. Who were your guys' favorite character in this one?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to go for someone other than Kiryu, I mean, like, I still have a fondness for Date, who kind of does become this reoccurring character, the policeman who, I forget, what was it, two or three, he turns into a newspaper reporter for a while and then kind of comes back to being a policeman. But he's always kind of had Kiryu's back. And, he actually plays a surprisingly big role in the first game. I'd almost forgotten how big a role he played. Like, I always liked Date.
I love Date, but I feel like he works better for me as, like, a long-term series character rather than, like, he doesn't stand out to me for any one particular game.
No,
it's just fair. It's more like his overarching time with Kiryu. Like, yeah, you're right. He's I mean, in the end, he's like one of Kiryu's, like, oldest allies, like, because they have a tendency to die.
Yeah.
Date and Haruka are, like, the only two people who don't die in this game.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I guess Nishiki for me here, just because of the way it builds off Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost I'm so sorry. Go ahead. You can...
I will say the thing with his sister is kind of weird, just because, like, it's so weird. She's just completely off screen. Like, we don't even get to see her. This was some nitpicky.
Yeah. I mean, some of that probably a function of the original PS2 games. And I mean, like, I'm not even sure how. I know some of that was, like, filled in after the fact. Like, not all of that story was in the original PS2 game, and they've, like, backfilled it in. But, some of that may be an artifact of that.
Yeah, sure.
But, it's a fair criticism, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Nishiki and what he represents. There's a great scene, but I think it's in Zero where... it must be in Zero, where Nishiki actually drives Kiryu out of the city because he's, like... I think people are gunning for him, and he's trying to tell... He's telling him, like, go, don't come back. Like, you have to leave. And there's a... Gosh, am I remembering this wrong? I feel like...
No, that's right.
Nishiki holds a gun... like silently to the back of Kiryu's head, but he can't do it.
Yeah, but you hear it goes to black and you hear a shot, and that's when there's a chapter break, and then it turned out Nishiki shot somebody else, or shot somebody that was coming after them, and that about made me shit myself. I mean, granted it's a prequel, so we know Kiryu isn't gonna die, but it still kind of got me, like, what happened?
Yeah. I have a hard time picking a favorite. I mean, I've talked about Nishiki and Date, and I mean, I like the florist, and like I even like the guys over at Stardust, you know. Kiryu in some ways is like the least interesting character out of the main cast for me. Not that I don't like him, but I don't know, in this game, like other characters, I'm just so much more excited about the other characters in this game than I am Kiryu, I think.
I like Kiryu, but in the games that he stars in, he's very much a straight man / everyman, where stuff kind of happens around him so that you can project yourself onto him. So he to me, he comes off more like the personality of a brick, more or less.
I do like that side of him better as he gets older. In some of the later entries, I mean, in 6, he's a grandfather, for crying out loud. Like, mm-hmm. I like that stoic side more when he's like, when those around him start verbally going after him for being old and they start calling him out on his age. I kind of like that better.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I say personality of a brick, but in this series, it's a good thing because when wacky shit happens around him, it makes it all the funnier. And then when the side quest inevitably leads to a beat down, then it turns into comedy gold. That being said, in this particular game, I'm actually going to say Hakura, or the little girl.
Haruka?
Haruka, because she kind of doesn't put up with Kiryu shit in this game.
No, she's spunky.
And she's also kind of not afraid of the crime life, because when she went to that mahjong parlor and just sat right up and was telling Kiryu how to bet, I thought that was kind of a beautiful moment.
She is pretty likable for what is she, like 9 in this game or something like that? Mm-hmm. Usually 9-year-olds in video games are very annoying and cringe. Yeah.
She's got to be less than that. I would have said 6 or 7, maybe.
That's what I thought, too.
Hmm. Kelly, you were talking about a long-faced or like large-faced Shimano, the one that you remember because he has a big face. Mm-hmm. There's a character that I think shows up in 3 first. I believe it's 3, and then like a little. Then he's a little bit through like 4 and 5, and I can't fully remember his name. It's you something or another. But he's another one that I quite like, and he's another one with like the actor that they modeled after is a very large faced individual. You'll know him when you see him when you finally get there. I wonder what your take on him is. He does have a very questionable scene with Haruka in, I think, Yakuza 4, maybe? Yeah, it must be, because in 5 you get to play her. So it must be in 4, where she's like, I don't know how old she is there, but I don't, 13, 14, like, kind of like teenager.
Oh, it sounds like it's going to make me cringe.
It is a little bit. Yeah.
But what you going to do? It's a Japanese game. That happens. Just grin and move on.
It's more restrained than you might be thinking, but you'll know it when you see it.
But yeah, that scene. Well, that scene where Kiryu slapped her, and then I was kind of like, oh, okay, game. Can we stop with the slapping of the chicks? And then a couple of scenes later, she slaps him. And it's like, okay, thank you, game, for giving me that, because Kiryu needed a slap there. She needed to take him down a peg. So yeah, if we're done talking about characters, did we have a favorite minigame? No. I know yours, Josh.
It's always Pocket Car Racing. It always is. They give me that. I'm going to be spending hours on it.
I did have to stop myself from getting sucked into bug wrestling. I don't know the actual name of it, because you get me into a collectible card game, I will get into that stuff. And the only reason I had to stop myself from it is because I needed to finish this game in a timely manner.
Is that Mizu King?
I want to go back.
I think it was called Mizu King.
Yeah. I Ladybug Wrestling. I think that's
scantily clad Ladybug Wrestling.
Yes.
When I played Kiwami, that was before I was really ready to like commit time into these mini games. So none for me.
I can't think of one. Sorry.
That's okay. The series is just so famous for their mini games. I didn't know if you guys would get sucked into at least one.
In later games, I did. Not really with this one. Not with either of the Kiwami games, I don't think. Although, well, this isn't about Kiwami 2, so never mind. There's a really pervy one in Kiwami 2. No, I take that back. That might be in 4 or 5. It doesn't matter.
Sounds like there's a pervy one in every game.
Yeah, probably. I mean, This one is just, the one I'm thinking of is just straight up, like, it's not even a game. It's a, like a video. They have these in a couple of the games, like a video, chat, but like a video store.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's a soft core porn store where Kiryu sits with a box of tissues in a little private booth. I mean, yeah.
God, which one was that in?
That happens.
I know exactly what you're talking. Yeah.
But there's one where you can actually watch the videos. Like, it's like a collectible thing.
I think the one you're talking about is Zero, because I wandered into one of those booths and got an achievement that said I just did it for the trophy.
Maybe it was Zero then. Who knows? But I'm pretty sure that wasn't in Kiwami, so none for me here.
So I was very much having a, gee, thanks game. That's not going to make me look like a pervert on my PSN profile at all.
But well, it depends. Regardless. Was the timestamp on that trophy like 3 months after you'd finished the rest of the game and you came back just for that trophy or something?
No, it was while I was playing because I wandered in there by accident.
Oh, sure. Right. Accident. Yes. I remember, right. The store is on like the second or third floor. There is no accidentally walking into that.
Well, no, but any store that houses a mini game is differently colored. And I thought, oh, here's a differently colored store. I wonder what mini game this is. And now I'm a pervert. So finally, we get to ask, did you guys have any memories tied to this game? What you were doing in your life? Anything that you were going through at the time while you was playing? Or
I will say this, that I've alluded to this multiple times now, but I wonder if some of the, you know, the character arcs and the interactions just kind of hit differently for me because I am a father, and so I viewed it through like the fatherly lens, the fatherly Kiryu lens, not just with Haruka, but I guess the whole, you know, him and Nishiki and stuff like that,
and him and Kazuma.
Yeah, that one never really, that didn't get to me.
No, I'm sure games hit a lot differently when you have a kid.
Yeah.
The Kazuma thing, maybe if there had been more time given to like building that relationship up.
Yeah, that one's more taken as, you know, as is.
Yeah. Here's what's happened over the last 25 years. Now you're up to speed.
For me, we may have brought this up before, but so at the beginning of the year, I said that I was that my New Year's resolution for gaming was going to be to not bog myself down so much with as much what I call backtrack homework, where I say I'm going to play stuff for backtrack. So then what do I do this January? I put in Yakuza, Kiwami, and Atelier Ryza, two games that we had on the backtrack schedule. Now, to be fair, they were fun. To me, they didn't feel like homework because I actually had fun playing them. Ryza a little bit more than Yakuza. Not because I didn't like this game, but just because I had played Zero recently and I hadn't played an Atelier game in years. So it was kind of nice going back to that well. But I'll never forget Matt being like, Kel, it's not even January and you already broke your resolution. And it's like, I know, Matt, I know, but you got to understand, we've got these games coming up in a couple of months. I kind of wanted to check them out. And if I don't play them now, I'm never going to get to them. And I was like, nope, fair enough.
And that's different if it's games you want to play already anyway. That just gives you a reason to play them now rather than later.
Yeah, and to be fair, it was kind of stuff that I had picked up and couldn't really get into last year that was causing the problem, like Persona 5 Strikers, where even though it wasn't a bad game, I just was not feeling that game in particular. And yeah, that one felt like homework.
I mean, if you want homework, I'm pretty sure Josh and I agreed. You and Matt have to play Metal Max before we do the backtrack on it.
Oh, it's on my PSN home screen right now, taunting me. I think that's why I haven't wanted to quote unquote finish Final Fantasy VII Rebirth yet, and why I've been breaking my hand trying to do some of the hard mode challenges because it's like well, it's either maybe if I throw my controller and break it in frustration, I won't have to play Metal Max Xeno. But that's 60 or what? How much are controllers now? They've got shot up so bad in price. I think they're like 80. The PlayStation controller is like $80 now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I ought to just put up the game and play something else. But hey, I'm also going on vacation in 2 weeks, so I won't be around to play startup Metal Back Xeno. So haha, take that game. Okay. No, I
don't think you're hurting Pascal's feelings if he doesn't have to think about Metal Backs again.
Boy, she sure showed me.
Yeah. But you know, Pascal, there's also entirely the possibility that I could enjoy the game, because that's happened before.
Remember what you said about when you walked into that room and now I'm a pervert? Well, yeah. Get ready for the 30-hour version of that.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to have this conversation? Now I'm a pervert. I just unlocked a trophy and I'm looking at the trophy screen? Now I'm another pervert.
See, I thought that game was about mechs. I didn't know it was pervy.
Okay.
If only it were about mechs.
Okay. No, we shall see.
As I make it out to be.
I know. Well, it doesn't sound like nearly as bad as like, Criminal Girls or a Nep Nep game or what have.
Let's just say you've probably heard, like, I wouldn't touch you if you were the last man on the face of this planet. You've heard expressions like that before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now take that to the next like logical step. Except it's a room full of mostly like men discussing this type of situation. Where do you think they're going to go with that?
They're probably going to get a little gross.
And a couple of young girls.
Yeah.
Like you can almost like hear the drool coming out of the old man when he speaks.
The material writes itself.
Yeah. Oh, I'm starting to feel skeevy now.
Well, that being said, did anybody have any other memories tied to Yakuza Kiwami?
I can't think of anything specifically.
Because it's not just a standalone thing. It's, you know, it goes together with all the rest. So it's hard to just have one isolated thing.
Not even really an isolated thing, more just like, Were you doing something important in your life while you was playing it, or were you associating it with something?
I think for me, this was about the time period where I was just like so excited and happy that Yakuza games were like coming out in a very timely manner. Like this one only took like a year, which, you know, now we get them like almost day and date. But like Yakuza 5, there was like 2.5, almost 3 years between when that game came out in Japan and we finally got it localized in America, and was kind of like wasn't entirely sure if the series was gonna keep going at that point. And then just a couple of years later, like Yakuza Zero hits and the series kind of takes off, and you know, like Kiwami was kind of like the place where I felt like, okay, the series is actually like doing really well now.
Yeah, because I remember when 3 was in the middle of coming out and people were upset at the changes that they were making to it. And I'm just thinking, like, guys, literally 2 shows ago, because this was on a podcast, you were complaining about it not coming here at all and not wanting to play the other 2 games because of it. Now you're mad that they're having to change some stuff because of Sony's stupid policies. You know, and now it's practically an annual series, sometimes biannual, like last year.
Yep.
I'd heard of Yakuza. I might have even played Zero already at this point, but I volunteered to review the collection, which is 3, 4, and 5 for, I guess, PS4. And so I at that point I'd only played Zero, so I knew I had, before I could start on 3, 4, and 5, like I knew in this case I would have to play through Kiwami 1 and 2, because it's, I don't, that it is how I like to experience games, but I think in this case with the Yakuza series, it would make little sense to just jump straight to 3 and go from there story-wise, mm-hmm. and try to get a good, you know, a good sense of it for review purposes. So that's how it's probably why I don't remember much of Kiwami 2, because that was just kind of like I love Zero, I love Kiwami, and then I had to play Kiwami 2 just to quickly move on, right? And so it didn't get to simmer with me as much, so I could move on to the collection. But that's kind of how I played Kiwami. Like I still enjoyed it, but I also was like looking ahead, like, oh, gotta play the next 4 games are already like downloaded on my system. I gotta go.
Yeah, so in other words, homework. In your mind, it probably felt like homework, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, you could say that. I don't think so. Like, definitely not the first one, not Kiwami. It's just, you know, it transcends that. It was the story captivated me enough where that was not a bother, for sure.
Okay, no, that's fair. Well, guys, I think that's a show. Did you have something, Ryan?
Not really. No, I thought I had something, but not really.
Because if that's the case, I think that's a show. And next month, we're celebrating Atelier Month. Atelier April.
Because that's a thing.
Yeah.
I'll be on the Ryza episode, so.
Yeah, so that one will be fresh in my head and will be interesting to talk about. But we'll also
I've
be getting
into... I've never played one.
Have you ever...
I literally just played my first one, so.
Have you ever done any crafting in an RPG, Pascal?
It's not my favorite mechanic. So now, thank you for reminding me why I haven't played Atelier.
Then good call.
The Atelier series, from what I've heard, was so popular that's why many modern RPGs, Japanese RPGs, now have crafting in them.
Mm.
Yep. And I feel like it's different with Atelier from my experience, just because it's built around it.
Yeah, no, Atelier games are built around the crafting, not the other way around with most RPGs, where it's just kind of a side system. But from what I have read, it's definitely, the original Atelier Marie was definitely popular enough that a lot of games tried to ape the crafting in it with their own games.
I think I have Nelki. I have one or two of them. That's not the one with the thunder thighs, is it?
They all have thunder thighs.
Okay.
That's just a series staple at this point.
Uh-huh.
But so we're gonna be getting into the Arlen trilogy, which is Rarona, Maruru, and Totori. And then I think if we have time we're gonna get into which was a fourth game in the series, which usually doesn't happen. Usually it was just a trilogy. But I guess Gus needed to go back to that well, because that was a rather popular trilogy at some point. But it's going to be an interesting month. I can't wait to talk about them. Because for me, I loved the Atelier games. And then because they were kind of an annual series at one point, I got kind of burned out on them by the time the Dusks trilogy came out, and hadn't really touched any until Ryza. So it's going to be an interesting backtrack, and I love these games, even though there are times that I kind of get... Well, I get frustrated with them a little bit, because it's annoying when you're trying to do a quest and you go into a section of town and you end up triggering like 5 cutscenes, and by the time they've all played, you can't remember why you needed to go to town in the first place.
Those Atelier games, they've always got those like weird triggering cutscenes.
Yeah. And then when you need to trigger something, you can't.
Yeah.
So It's a series I like, but can also get kind of tired of pretty quick, depending on my mood.
Don't they also have time limits or timers?
Early ones, yes.
Yeah, the early ones did.
Rise of Descent.
Yeah.
That's another thing I don't like.
Some people love it, and some people get very overwhelmed by it, by not having the time limit. Because, yeah, the time limit definitely makes you laser focus, but then when you don't have one, it's easy to kind of not know what you need to do, if that makes sense.
It does. So, I almost didn't give Persona 4 a fair shot because of, like, just the days, knowing that there was a time. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, some of those early games can get a little frustrating in that regard, but I think they maintained. And plus, you know, if you skip all the cutscenes, they're short enough that you're kind of meant to play them multiple times anyway to get different endings or to kind of push yourself a little bit farther out, if that makes any sense. But we'll get into all that in a couple of weeks. That being said, thank you, Ryan and Pascal and Josh, for hanging out with me tonight to talk about Yakuza.
Nani?
No, no problem. I got to go restock the claw machine.
Hey, can you give me some more of those cats? I really want real plushes of those kitty cats that are in those. They're so cute. And thank you, Matt, who had to bail a little bit early because he had a field trip that he has to wake up at 4 a.m. for, so... Have fun on your field trip. And thank you, listener, for hanging out with us to talk about Yakuza. We will be back at you in a pair of weeks to dive into the Arlen trilogy and all of the fun that went with them, good and bad. So have a wonderful rest of your week. We will catch you later. Have a good night.